Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Pioneer Press inside TCO Performance Center, where we just got done talking with the Minnesota Vikings new quarterback, JJ McCarthy. What an experience. What a 24 hours that everyone here in this building has gone through, and now landing a quarterback that they appear to be very comfortable with having landed at the number 10 overall pick, didn't have to trade up. And I think that we should just start with our first impressions of talking to JJ McCarthy and his answers, and then we can get into everything else. Dallas Turner, I want to hear what you have to say about the Falcons and their approach to the whole thing, and we'll go from there on what the next steps are and how much patience might be required with JJ McCarthy. But my biggest takeaway, Dane, is that this was not JJ McCarthy's first press conference. It's not his first interview, and you won't find too many human beings his age as comfortable talking to a room full of people and as confident as JJ McCarthy. I mean, this is a guy who talked about being in fifth grade and deciding to, he said, edit his life to take this approach as a quarterback. I mean, what were you doing in fifth grade? I wasn't editing my life to be a pro quarterback someday, but that is kind of who JJ McCarthy is.
Yeah, he's probably the most polished person I can imagine talking to 24 hours after the draft. I mean, the kid's 21 years old. When I was 21 years old, if you would have asked me to stand in front of a room of people with billionaires to my left, I would be a mute. And this kid, he won the press conference. There was no doubt he was going to. And it wasn't the most insightful. It wasn't the most, you know, crazy good answers, great quotes, all that. But it was just very, very by the book, clearly knows what he's doing. And he really at least feels the part of a franchise quarterback standing up there at the podium talking. And I think that kind of matters to a degree. Now, it doesn't, like, he's going to have to show it on the field. But he fits the mold of being, like, a guy that can be a face of the franchise just simply by talking to him.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, a way to describe it. It's kind of like one of those children who starts playing piano at 4 years old and they know that that's all they're going to do. What are the prodigy children or something? Yeah. And they have huge vocabularies and they know all the music theory by the time they're eight. And you're like, what? How the heck did that happen? Well, that's the same thing with McCarthy. And he went to IMG Academy, which you're all going to read articles from their coach because every single one of us is going to interview this man. But I spoke with their coach this morning about McCarthy, and it sounds exactly the same as it is now, that he got to IMG because they weren't playing football in Illinois that year with COVID. And he said, I mean, the guy just dove into football. Every conversation, he said, is about football. He just has so much Kevin O'Connell vibes. Like, I don't know what O'Connell was like at 21, but O'Connell at his present age is like J.J. McCarthy. He's like an older version of him, where it just seems to be an all-about-football type of mentality, which, you know, it's actually funny because Kirk Cousins talked about this during his time here, where being a quarterback is not just, oh, I'll just show up to work and we'll see what we do here today and then go home and whatever, do whatever I want. It is a lifelong commitment as long as you're in the NFL to holding down that position. But, you know, I think the other thing that stands out too is you understand why. And he talked about this. Someone asked about the emotional intelligence, which just means, do you get along with people? I don't know when it started being called that, but his connectivity with teammates, the way people talk about him, the way he immediately was even relating to reporters in the room, connecting with people in the room, you just see it. And I think it's important if you're going to be a quarterback, how you communicate with your teammates matters so much. And this guy for this age is about the best communicator I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I would imagine if we got to walk into the Michigan practice facility today, and we asked all of his teammates just kind of how they feel about him, they would all say the same thing. You can just tell it's like a very genuine kind of interaction. In being people who talk to athletes all the time, you can tell when it's not genuine. You can tell when they're just up there kind of spouting BS or just, you know, shooting from the hip. It really feels like, at least the way he was connecting, to your point about with the reporters today, like, looking them in the eye, answering the question. Like, I get that that's the way he probably interacts with teammates as well. And it does matter because, and he used it yesterday. I don't like when this is where it goes, but last night he said, every Sunday we go to war and you got to have the guy in the foxhole with you ready to fight and kill and bleed to get. And, you know, that doesn't drive with me, but I'm sure it does with teammates, and just having that connection of, you know, I'm willing to go out there and do whatever it takes to win. I think that really plays in football. And I think when you have a kid like that at 21, who's already able to kind of grasp how important it is for your teammates to see how much you care and how it's almost innate where you can tell he really does care. I think that's kind of something that can be a weapon for him even before he gets on the field. There's a lot to learn. He's still going to be a guy that needs some time and development to ramp way up. But one part where he won't need any sort of coaching or, you know, development is just the ability to handle the press conference, to handle standing in front of a room, to kind of be that leader of men. He's already got that, and there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think his point was that he really values the relationships with his teammates because he knows that if you're going to win a championship with them, that you have to understand everybody. And even I'll throw this out there too, a thing that subtly impressed me was he was asked about the supporting cast. Hey, actually, I may have asked it. So it was like, why did you want to come here so much? And he ran off the entire offense off the top of his head, including offensive linemen. I'm not sure that he totally knew who's playing left guard. Neither do we, JJ. So we're all going to find that out together. But he, without any thought, it was, well, I mean, we got this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, including we got Darisaw, we got O'Neal, we got this. And it was just obvious that he had thought about it, that he had studied it, that he had put work into the Minnesota Vikings as a team that he wanted to go to. And he also even mentioned being in the Midwest and liking hockey and all those things, which is precious. And, you know, we're all going to like that and so forth. Oh, he's one of us and whatever. But I was thinking more along the lines of, if you saw, did you see the CJ Stroud video where Micah Parsons is doing a podcast because everyone's got a podcast. Imagine having a podcast. And Micah Parsons says, like, oh, put together your dream offense. Without thinking, the dude builds a full offensive line that would win every Super Bowl. I mean, with no thought whatsoever. He's like, oh, the guy from the Ravens, Kevin Zeitler, and then this guy and Creed Humphrey. And whoa, this guy has been studying ball. Because sometimes we run into players who are like, who do we play next week? I don't know. Like, I just do my job. But as a quarterback, you can't be that way. You have to be very aware of everything. And I just, it's just one of those small things that you kind of notice about the way he's handling himself, the way he's presenting himself to us in his first time here. Now, let's go back to last night, though, because you were in this very room talking about, or the one next door, me talking about their plan and what we thought was going to happen. What I believe you thought was going to happen was they would have to trade up to get J.J. McCarthy. They end up not having to trade up to get J.J. McCarthy more than just the one spot, which doesn't matter a bit to me, not giving up anything more than late-round draft capital. were you surprised? What was your face like? Why don't, for the video audience, why don't you make your face when they were able to get J.J. McCarthy from last night, try to recreate and then describe it for the audio audience, what it was like, your face, when they did not have to make that big move.
You know the Alonzo Mourning meme where he's on the bench and he's like looking and he's kind of like a little perplexed, and then he's, it looks like he's like, I actually could get down with that. And he's looking perplexed again, and he's like, actually, that might work. That was me last night. As every pick went by, I was like, they're going to get this guy without having to trade up at all. This is unbelievable. And I didn't expect that. I think when we talked, I said, best case scenario, if you miss out on Drake May, is getting J.J. McCarthy at 11. But I didn't think that they would get him at 11 or 10. And I agree with you. Like, it doesn't matter that they traded a fifth round pick to move up a spot to make sure they didn't get jumped. I had, in my brain, there was no way they were going to be able to pull this off while holding on to 23. And we'll talk about Dallas Turner later, but I thought that was really impressive restraint by Kwesi Adofo-Mensah to just, at that point in the night, losing out on Drake May and not just panicking and saying, you know what, screw it. Like, we'll go 11 and 23 to you, LA Chargers. Like, we can't miss out on J.J. McCarthy. It shows that they did their due diligence. They had a good read on the board. And I think what he talked about it yesterday, minimizing regret, after, he was asked, like, how do you decide not to move up or when it is the right time? And his point was, like, you also, in your evaluation process, look at all the other players, all the other teams in front of you, and whether they have a need or a want to take one of these players that we think could be top-tier talents. And just to see the way that they were able to navigate this whole process and get their guy or one of their guys that they've liked all along, I mean, it couldn't have worked out much better. And then you, like we just talked about, you see him talk today, and you can just kind of get the vibe that this guy, he feels like a quarterback, at least off the field. And I will continue to stress, like, we need to see it on the field too. But I'm inclined to believe, the quarterback guru, Kevin O'Connell, who's put tens, dozens and dozens and dozens upon hours, throughout this process. If he locked in on a guy like J.J. McCarthy and they were willing to pull the trigger, it's because he believes he can get a lot out of him.
So throughout this process leading up to this, I talked a lot about my skepticism regarding J.J. McCarthy. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, last night when they draft him, and I'm like, wow, that's actually a really good pick because they didn't have to trade up and they get McCarthy. Then some of the reaction from the audience is like, wait, you were not on the McCarthy train for most of this. Now, I'm not going to like go back and say, oh, I made it all up. No, I do have it. But here's what I was thinking about last night. I was thinking, what was my holdup? What was it that was kind of holding me back from this? Because it is a really good fit, a good personality mm-hmm. fit. And I think even a skill set fit to work with the tools that he has, which are of high quality. I mean, he throws the ball hard. He runs quickly. Whatever. You all know the tools that he has. Yeah. And then Kwesi Adofo-Mensah put into one word what I had been hunting for with my discomfort with the McCarthy idea over I don't know how long. So thanks, Kwesi, I guess, for having a better vocabulary than me because he went to Princeton and I didn't. But although shout out Brockport Golden Eagles. Anyway, unknown. The word was unknown. He said that J.J. McCarthy asked him, so why wouldn't you draft me? Like, what reason would you not draft me? And Kwesi told him, it's because you're a bit of an unknown, because you don't have that many passes, and because it is harder to get comfortable with someone who has these unknown elements mm-hmm. because we can't just look at what they did in college and just without even trying and just like, oh, look up at the TV casually and be like, oh, first round pick. You need to go much more in depth, which I am absolutely certain that they did in this effort that they put in to make the decision with J.J. McCarthy. But that the same discomfort that I had with it is the same discomfort that the general manager of the Vikings acknowledged having with McCarthy as well. And I think what this leads into, Dane, is the next big discussion about J.J. McCarthy is what? You know what it's going to be, right? When he's going to play.
When does he play? Yeah, when exactly. Is he on the field?
I should have given you more time. When he's going to play. And because there's so much unknown, that's because he needs more reps and he needs time. And I'm just going to put this out there right now that he looks so young to me. I'm getting older and they're staying the same age. So everyone does. But Kirk is like my age. So I'm like, oh, yeah, old quarterback. Yeah, you and me. We're same age. McCarthy looks like a child.
He's a kid.
Yeah,
he's a kid. And I can even say that now. I'm 32. I'm 11 years older than J.J. McCarthy. Wild.
And the youngest quarterback.
Yep.
And I'm just going to say the word patience.
Yep.
Because there's unknowns, because there's a lot to work on here, because he needs to work on touch on the football. He needs to understand that you can't just whip it past everybody like he did in college. Some of those highlight reel throws are actually not good because you don't want to just be firing it, 100 miles an hour across the field. Mm-hmm. And I'm willing to kind of step back and say, let's see how this entire process plays out without each week, each training camp practice. Is he QB1? Is he QB1 yet? Is he freaking QB1 yet? Like, we're not going to be that. I'm not going to be that guy.
Let's not. Let's agree not to be that guy. And there's going to be enough of that.
I'm going to want to be that guy.
Yeah, and I'm sure we will. We can be that, like, behind closed doors. But that we're not getting that out into, and there's going to be enough of that, right? There's going to be enough of every single time Sam Darnold looks bad, and there's going to be times where Sam Darnold looks bad. It's going to be a referendum on why Sam Darnold should now go sit on the bench and hold the clipboard, and J.J. McCarthy should be under center. But patience, like caller said, I caution you, that I can promise the fan base that there's going to be patience from the infrastructure in place here. There's no way they're going to ruin this kid by throwing him in just because Sam Darnold had a bad game or two bad games in a row, maybe even three bad games in a row. There's going to be a time when J.J. McCarthy is deemed ready to play football in the NFL by the head coach of the football team, Kevin O'Connell. And only then will he play football in the NFL for the Vikings. And I think it's as simple as that. We don't have to, and we're going to have to probably fight against this throughout the year. Because there's going to be fans that want him in. There's going to be talking heads on the television saying, what are the Vikings doing? Why would you draft a guy with a 10 pick if you're not? Patience. And that's the most important thing with this.
You know what's been really an adjustment recently is talking about this team, coaching staff, management overall in general, as in, it seems like they know what they're doing. Because for a long time there, when I first got here in 2016, it seemed like Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman had it pretty locked down, mm-hmm. and they had built an excellent team, and they even adjusted on the fly pretty well to what happened with Teddy Bridgewater, so forth. But then for a long time, we were in a rut of the kicker/punter, whether they're trading a fifth-round pick for a kicker or punter. We're not sure.
Chris Herndon.
Then Chris Herndon, and they're still not filling the guard spots, which get to that soon. They're just not being realistic about where they are with this Kirk Cousins thing, and they're trying to save their jobs, and they're flailing, and they're desperate. And I came out even with the McCarthy pick, even if I'm thinking, all right, it's going to take some time to figure out what happens here, and there are certain parts of this that makes me nervous. I think I can also reasonably say that in this environment and with Kevin O'Connell and with the work that they put into this, that it's pretty easy to be comfortable that they're not going to completely botch it by throwing McCarthy into the wolves. And this is actually another reason to even keep Nick Mullins on the team. Imagine if Sam Darnold gets banged up and Nick Mullins starts, people will be like, bust. He's a bust. What are we going to do? But that might be right, though, to not put him in. And the fact that O'Connell doesn't have to really answer to anyone except for, I guess, the ownership of this team. And I'm guessing he's also prepared them for that with a discussion of this isn't someone we want to play right away unless he's really, truly ready. I think there's a reason to say, you know what? I think they'll do this right. Now, that doesn't eliminate the pressures that pop up, but I think that they'll have a good understanding of when it's time, is my point.
Yeah, and I think I keep going back to this. When you zoom out and like take a look at the last 3 years from like a 30,000-foot perspective, everything set up for last night, every move that they made, the decisions not to extend Kirk Cousins, the decision to let him walk, all was made with the 2024 QB class in mind. Last night went about how they would want it to go, and they got their guy. All of it seems to kind of make sense step by step by step. Now that you have him, like, this is the most important step, and they're not going to screw that up. They did everything right to get the guy that they wanted or one of the guys that they honed in on. So there's absolutely no way that they're going to just rush and, you know, rush the rest of this process. And I think if you want to trust Kevin O'Connell at this point, you should, because everything that they've done has kind of lined up with what they said they were going to do. Now, I do wonder, like, is there a time where J.J. McCarthy could look ready faster than you expect right now in April? Yeah, I think there is. Maybe he does get on the field in training camp, and he's able to make some of these high-level throws, and he is ready sooner than expected. That's a bonus. But to expect him to be the week one starter or anything of that nature, just don't expect it, because they're not going to rush this part of the process. And I think the fact that we're able to sit here, talk about this in a pretty pragmatic way while also saying, like, yeah, they know what they're doing, like, that matters. And that's only because they've consistently been, you know, saying the same thing over and over again. And now here we are with the guy that they hope can be the quarterback of the future. But he's only going to be the quarterback of the future if they don't break him in the present. And I don't think they will.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, to me, it's until proven otherwise. Yep. Like, they have earned so far with their process to get to this point the belief that they have the rest of it plotted out, that they went through this process to determine that they would pick J.J. McCarthy versus Bo Nix is what it ultimately came down to. And so they decided to go with him. And that process makes a lot of sense to how they approached it, flying out, meeting with these guys separately, not just going off the pro days, not just going off the combine, putting in the effort to make the decision, and then now having a plan to handle them. I don't think that they went through this and went like, oh my gosh, we got him. Now what do we do? Right. So I'm guessing that there was, from the very beginning, this conversation started way before they even called J.J. McCarthy's name. So yeah, patience is the word. But if he beats out Sam Darnold in training camp, then his job is his. Like, he doesn't have to wait. It's just preparing everyone for the possibility that he does. I was also thinking during the press conference, as we were talking to Dallas Turner, that Dallas Turner probably thought he'd be doing his own press conference as a top 10 draft pick with 10 sacks this year, top pass rush win rate, a 40.5-inch vertical, which is like Derrick Rose, like the craziest athlete and a star in college who went to the college football playoff as the centerpiece of his team's defense. And he's having to be like, yeah, I guess I did lose to J.J. McCarthy. It's like a funny situation. I thought that he was, he had a lot of humility about that and sense of humor about that. But normally, Dane, this would be someone's top 10 draft pick. Yeah. It just, I don't know. Everything came together to present Kwesi Adofo-Mensah with the best possible scenario. But there is a discussion that I didn't really dive deep into in my immediate reaction of, in total, what they gave up to get Dallas Turner, it was a lot. And then Kwesi gave his, like, take your Clark Kent glasses off and go try to get a championship player. What did you think of what it took to get Dallas Turner versus what they could have gotten by just staying and waiting until 23?
Last night when I was watching and all of a sudden it's pick 17 and the Vikings are on the clock and it starts to come to reality that they're going to draft Dallas Turner, who a lot of people thought was the number one defensive player in a different draft. And I'm not, this isn't hyperbolic. Like, he might go top five in a weaker draft. He was expected to go top 10 in this draft. When all of that was happening, I was like, holy crap, this is, it is a grand slam, not even a home run. When you zoom out and you think about everything that they gave up, like, I guess there can be a little bit more room for criticism, because at the end of the day, what does it end up being? It ends up being a second round pick this year, because that's what you traded, along with the second round pick next year to get up to 23. And then it ends up being, so a second round pick this year, a second round pick next year, a third round pick next year, and a fourth round pick next year. I think that's what the whole trade package ends up being. And that sounds like a lot now that I say it now. But if Dallas Turner's as good as a lot of people think he's going to be, I'm not sure that it's going to matter what they gave up. And I know that's not the best way to build a team. I know it's not, we'll worry about the draft picks for next year. I know you have to have a plan. But I think sometimes it's okay to be malleable. And like Kwesi Adofo-Mensah said, he's a spreadsheet calculator guy. And last night he said, you know what, screw it. This guy, I feel like he can raise our floor and we can take us to another level. I'm okay with it. I asked my friend this earlier today. We were texting about the draft. He was upset because he's like, they gave up way too much for 23 in the first place, and then they gave up way too much to get to 17. And I think a lot of people are just frustrated because it feels like they didn't have a plan with 23 when they didn't use 23 to move up for Drake May. They probably tried. I said, well, what if everything with the draft worked out and you still got J.J. McCarthy right around 11-10, and then Dallas Turner's falling, and say that the trade for 23 was never even made, and you thought they were done, and you learned last night that they took 2 second-round picks and a third and a fourth, and they went up and got a guy that a lot of people thought. What if the 23 was never part of the equation, and they just traded 2 second-round picks and a couple later picks later last night, and they went up and got Dallas Turner? I think people would praise it. I think a lot of people would praise the aggressiveness of that move. So that's, I get it. I get the trade value charts don't like how much the Vikings gave up to get 23. They don't like how much the Vikings gave up to get from 23 to 17. But I keep going back to just how good this player could be. And I think he could be a really, really good one.
So last year with Will Anderson, when the Texans got Will Anderson, the draft charts hated it.
Yep.
The draft analysts hated it. They said, why are you giving up next year's pick? It's going to be number one overall. How are you doing this? Of course, it was not. And Will Anderson was an immediate star for them that now plays a big role in putting them in the driver's seat to be a potential Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't have to work out like that. It might work out like Marcus Davenport, who the Saints traded everything for, and then we met Marcus Davenport and understood why that didn't work out. And not that there's anything wrong with him, it just seemed like he didn't really have the drive. Anyway, that's last year's problems. But with Dallas Turner, there's two minds I have. One of them is, look, if you took 3 players, what do we say? Is it 4 draft picks overall that goes? Yeah. The odds that 4 players add up to the same value as him. So if it's a calculator type of thing and you go, all right, well, if you got a good guard and you got a good, you know, safety, and none of them were fantastic, but maybe they're real good, and then another player contributes on special teams, like how much is that worth or something? But one draft theory that I have, despite what some of the numbers say, is that you win with greatness. You don't win with good. You don't win with a bunch of average or whatever. You win because you have Aaron Donald. You win because you have Jalen Ramsey, because you have Cooper Kupp. I know, 3rd-round pick, but because you have excellence. So I guess Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey are better examples. It's a 1st-round, top of the draft, 1st-round picks. A lot of times it takes mega star players to win a Super Bowl. And by a lot of times, I mean every time. There's no Super Bowl champion that doesn't have Hall of Famers on it. And if you're looking for, well, look, maybe we could get the next Irv Smith, the tight end, or maybe you can get the next running back that's Delvin Cook or something in the second round. Well, hey, look, those are good players and they can contribute for you. But greatness at the edge rusher position is going to help you compete for a Super Bowl, mm-hmm. and only greatness. The other thing is, too, you don't get edge rushers just hanging around. They aren't just like on the show. Oh, I went to the store and picked up an edge rusher. I mean, what normally happens is if they're good, their team pays them $30 million a year and you never get your mitts on them in free agency. Whereas guards or, you know, maybe even defensive tackles and some, maybe not special defensive tackles usually, but quality corners, other positions will be available to get good players and you can fill in the good, but you can't find the great. So they decided this is what has a chance at greatness, and his production, his pedigree, his athleticism, the fact that he's a good fit with Brian Flores. So I understand it. And I also think, well, you know, the draft is so random that maybe that second round pick would have been better than Dallas Turner. But at this position, unlikely. If you want it, if you want that defensive line in general, you usually have to draft it at the top of the draft. And just like that quote that is continues to pop up, if he's great, no one will ever ask what you traded up for him. And if you told me that 2 years from now, Dallas Turner's a double digit sack guy, would anyone be the slightest bit surprised with his talent? I wouldn't.
And would anyone care that it took a, you know, a third and a fourth round pick to move up, you know, along with another second? Like, no, I don't think they would. And I think there is reason to believe that he could be that double-digit sack guy. I mean, you mentioned all of his measurables. And by the way, he played at Alabama. Most of the time, those guys are pretty damn good because they, and he talked about this today, they live that mindset, that pro mindset, you know, that lifestyle day in, day out, and it gets them ready to play in the NFL. A lot of Alabama players who come into the NFL are ready to play right away. You lost Danielle Hunter, too, this offseason. Yeah, I know you signed Jonathan Grenard, but you needed a replacement for Danielle Hunter, a star. And maybe Dallas Turner isn't one, but maybe he is. And if he is, I think it was worth the risk.
And I also thought, just my first impression on his personality, I thought, you'll fit here.
Yeah, he's like, great.
Right? I mean, a personality type of guy, but also just seems to really love ball. I mean, he was getting a real kick out of telling us a story about the first time he ever played edge rusher and how he put a move on a guy and got a sack and loved it and stuff. And I was like, all right. And mm-hmm. he's talking about, here's another sort of ball knower hint, was he said, yeah, I mean, I've studied Jonathan Grenard, so when I got the text from him, I thought it was awesome. I'm like, I didn't even study Jonathan Grenard. I mean, when they signed him, I was like, okay, I got to go learn more about this player because, you know, I only saw him play once with the Texans, and yet that's, you know, so that mindset, like you said, it just seems like it's going to be a good fit here. And if it doesn't work out, then a lot of people can go back to their draft charts. I think draft charts are a bit of a scourge on society because third and fourth round draft picks, the entire time I've been here, and look, sometimes you need to hit on them. The entire time I've been here, like, how many third and fourths have ever become anything? You get greatness at the top of the draft and you fill in the rest. That's my opinion. So let's talk about Michael Penix. You went back and watched me from the draft show and I could not breathe because I was laughing so hard at the statement from Kirk Cousins' agent about him being taken off guard and getting a call at the last minute while the Falcons are on the clock. Like, hey, Kirk, you know, we got OTAs next Tuesday and we're drafting a quarterback. And, you know, make sure you got your penny, so the red one, so they can't hit you. They're like, wait, what was that part? Oh, we're just drafting a quarterback. Maybe in the first round. The what? And so Kirk was a little surprised. I am absolutely certain, 100%, that the Vikings didn't handle that way with Sam Darnold. They've made it clear to him for a long time that they were picking a quarterback. So that was wild. But is it justifiable for the Falcons in your mind? And give me a face, or describe your face for that one.
I'm smiling real big and widening my eyes for those who are listening. I was stunned. Quick backstory: you were obviously podcasting live. I went back and watched that reaction. Beat writers were in the media room that we're normally in, and Will Raggetts, friend of the show, I know he comes on, so I can mention his name here, and people will know who I'm talking about. Goes, holy crap! The Falcons are going to take Michael Penix, and all of us go, what? No, yeah, no, they're taking Michael Penix. And I said, Will, I'm pretty sure you got got. I'm pretty sure like it's a fake thing. And he goes, no, good look. And then all of a sudden, of course, like it starts to spread like wildfire. It was stunning. And if I squinted and was trying to spin zone this, I could maybe see how it makes sense. But at the end of the day, I think it's horrendous asset management. I think it makes no sense. And I just don't see how you could possibly do what you did on the opening day of free agency and give a guy $100 million guaranteed coming off an Achilles injury and being so sure he was the right guy and then bringing him in and having him talk about how alignment is so important with ownership and head coach and general manager and letting Kirk Cousins just say all these things publicly, trotting him around Atlanta with chains on. He's at the Braves game throwing out the first pitch. He's at Atlanta United, whatever the soccer team's called, wearing chains. They're tweeting all of it. And then just to have him have egg on his face in round one because you took his replacement, it's baffling. There's no way to and I know people are going to be like, well, if they're really good, then they won't get a chance to draft a quarterback for who cares? Like, if they're really good, that means they have a chance to win a Super Bowl. I don't think that's the true, and I think we all agree. But if they're really good, you know what would help a really good football team? A player at eight that could help the
Dallas
football
Turner.
Team. Dallas Turner. Anybody, you could Roma Dunze, I don't know, like all the people that were available, not someone who's going to replace the quarterback in place. It makes no sense. And I honestly, like, I've been a huge Kirk Cousins critic, just like this guy, over the course of his entire duration here. I don't think you can win a Super Bowl with him. I think Atlanta's going to figure that out. Maybe they already have. I felt bad for him last night. I really did, because I think, and I know some people are going to say, how do you feel bad for him? He has $100 million. And I'm like, yeah, that's fair. I don't feel that bad for him. But for a little part of me, the human side of me thinks, like, for the first time in his life, he was wanted. He was the belle of the ball for 2 months. For 2 months! You know, he's going to go up at OTAs, he's going to be asked about it. He's going to tell the same Holland High School story about how he didn't have offers and how he's proven people wrong. And he's ready to do it again. I think he thought he escaped that entire narrative when he signed the $100 million, more than that, contract with the Falcons. And he didn't. He didn't. It's objectively hilarious, too. But baffling. There's no world in which you could actually spin zone it. I know I said I could. I can't. I've talked myself out of it again. It's crazy.
So I'll try, and then I'll throw a conspiracy theory at you, because this is a good time to try to throw theories out there since it doesn't really make sense. You could look at it as this. They gave him 2 years' worth of guaranteed money, and the dead cap hits are not even that bad after those 2 years. Mm. If you're talking about someone who is 36, in 2 years they will be 38. Pretty hard to see Kirk Cousins playing much past 38 when he just had this catastrophic injury. They are really making an all-in push to try to win this year because they know their division is not good, but at some point it will get better. So, all right, well, we've got the best quarterback in the division. We can get to the playoffs, play him for 2 years, but we know that that's going to be it. It's just going to be 2 years. If we draft Michael Penix, then we have 2 years to figure out what we have in him, and then we have 3 years where he is cheap or relatively cheap. So two full seasons of rookie quarterback contract Penix, who's been developed over 2 years with a bunch of young players who are going to be there for a long time. Pitts, London, whoever else they draft. Not Roma Dunze. He went to a different team. But you know what I mean, right? So they've got all these players together, and they want to keep them together, and they're the similar pocket quarterback. Okay, that's how you try to make this work. And quarterback is just always worth taking more than anything else for the long term of your franchise. So that is the attempt to, like, justify this. The conspiracy theory.
Here we go.
Now, I heard one today. Somebody sent me, like, what if the NFL is going to take their pick away? No, they're not. They're not going to take their first-round pick away unless they really egregiously did something with the tampering. Here would be my thought. Kirk goes in for off-season workouts, and they say, you know, Kirk, why don't we just see where that recovery is? Why don't you stick your leg in that MRI machine? And they go, Oh, that looks fine. Everything is fine with your Achilles. It looks like it will definitely last 4 more years. And then they go, Mr. General Manager, sir, that Achilles is going to hold up for about 6 weeks. And this man is done playing football forever. There has to be a legitimate fear, regardless of how much they put down in guaranteed money, that he will get hurt again or not ever recover from the Achilles, and they will need Michael Penix next year. It would, and look, our team's afraid of this. Russell Wilson they traded for, and they paid him all the dead money to go away this year. So they might look at it as like, we're not going to get caught with our pants down like Denver did and have to maybe reach on Bo Nix because we just had no other options. So we're going to give ourselves a guy in case Kirk's leg explodes and he can't play ever again after this year. That is the best that I can possibly do to justify this. And as far as the funny part, yes, I did laugh hysterically on the show last night. The comedy of it is exactly what you laid out. He stood in front of us so confident, more confident than we'd ever seen him his entire time here, and was just like, it's what the dollars represent, baby. And he knew if somebody was going to go all in and they do it, he might have even known at that point because they were tampering. And so like, all right, you know, this guy is so confident. He gets this big deal. He's wearing the Dirty Bird thing. And he just thinks exactly what he said. Someone finally signed me to the big deal, the 4-year deal. They made it happen. They went full Kirk. And then they said, no, we're not going full Kirk. No, we're not. We're going like 3/4 of the way Kirk.
I applaud you for your spin zone. I applaud you for your conspiracy theory. But the spin zone, it does make sense. I could see that side of the equation or that side of the coin where it's like, we're going to need a guy at some point, maybe sooner than we think, and let's get him now and not wait. I don't think deep down I can still get down with that. The conspiracy thing, though, like, if they are really worried about the Achilles, then why did you sign him? Like, why did you sign him?
But would Kirk have even provided them with the actual medical update? Because they needed to make a decision that day. Would he have actually given him the medical update? Again, this is not reporting. This is me being maybe ridiculous or maybe right. We'll see. But I am like half facetious on this, but regardless of the actual medical reports, I just mean in general that they know might be a 1-year thing with Kirk Cousins if other parts of that body that's been beaten up for so many years come apart, and they might actually need it next year. So all of us laughing about it today might go, Michael Penix, starting quarterback 2025, because Kirk tore the other Achilles. And we saw this happen to Cam Akers.
Yep.
Tore the one Achilles, you tear the other one. And then I don't know, like, if Cam Akers is going to have a career after this, that might have been what they're hedging against, but they can't actually say it. So they just go, I don't know, we just liked him. Just like, whew, throws it.
Okay, actually, I can get down with that because you are right. Like, they can't say, well, we're worried about his Achilles, guys. He tore it last year. He's probably going to tear it again. They can't say that publicly. On the opening day of free agency, it might have been something as simple as Arthur Blank, who's getting old, saying, guys, we're doing this because I'm getting old and I want to see a good football team. We've been mid for too long since Matt Ryan left, even for most of Matt Ryan, the end of his career. But so I guess I can see that because You're not wrong. I mean, we literally saw it in practice. Cam Akers, who is maybe the most jacked, in-shape human being on the planet. And if he can come back from an Achilles injury and then immediately tear it again, I would imagine a 35, 36-year-old with a lot of mileage on his body, that can probably happen. So maybe you're right. Maybe in 365 days, we're looking at the next draft class and we're saying, well, like, there's not anyone here, and Atlanta has a quarterback now, and wow, maybe they were visionaries. I still have a hard time in the present, though, looking at the decision on the surface and saying that was the right one. Because I think when you make the decision to sign Kirk Cousins, you sign up for all of the risk involved with it. It wasn't a secret that he tore his Achilles. You sign up for all the risk, and it was a win-now move. And if you're making that big of a win-now move and you're paying for that big of a win-now move, I think the rest of your offseason should reflect a win now mentality. And frankly, that didn't. Like, there's going to be someone there. There's someone probably out there that exists that can help them win sooner than Michael Penix.
Let me try this out, because I'm starting to think, like, do I not dislike it?
Like, Should I
give him a shade more credit? I don't think it was so much. It was just pure shock last night. I couldn't even come up with a take. I couldn't even come up with the words to describe how random and accidental. Someone said they left auto draft on. I was like, that is so funny, because, like, that's exactly right. When you miss your fantasy draft and then you come back and you have four fullbacks, he's like, what the hell? Let me try this a little bit. What you said about the owner wanting to win right away and all that, I mean, I think that is pretty important. And with Michael Penix, what we can't forget is that what this move proves is that he's a pretty good prospect.
Yeah, that's
and
fair.
So you have a player now that the other teams don't have. That's something. And things change so quickly in the league that one day you think, oh, well, we got Russell Wilson, we're going to compete for a championship in Denver, and then Jared Stidham, Zach Wilson, and Bo Nix are your quarterback. We might should be laughing at them a little bit, right? I mean, so things change fast, and if you don't have any answer next year, and the other part of it, too, that I was going to bring up is, all right, well, Kirk wonders why they didn't get a player to help them this year. How many rookies, all right, Puka Nacua last year, how many rookies change the fate of a franchise for the following season? Just their rookie year. I can only think of a handful ever. If they drafted Dallas Turner, does that make the difference in his first year, where even edge rushers usually have a development curve? In his first year, does it mean difference between Super Bowl and not? So if you're only working on the tiniest of timelines where you can only really guarantee a year of Kirk and you don't even know what's going to happen next, thinking about a year or 2 years out, that's something that I think philosophically wise, you would always tell teams, hey, don't draft for today. In fact, we criticized the heck out of Spielman for, like, we needed a zone blocking center. And you're like, yeah. And then 3 years later, he's decent. Oh, okay. Well, a lot of times that's how it works. So I think you can get in their shoes and understand it. It's actually just so random and so shocking. And the way that this whole thing played out with Kirk that hit so hard, more than, hey, look, if he had been drafted at the 27th pick, no one would have said a thing. They would have been like, oh, they're getting their future quarterback. But instead it was eighth. So that's what made it so shocking.
Yeah. So I think you've kind of talked yourself into it.
I like it.
Yeah.
I love it.
There it is. There
actually,
it is.
I like it because it was funny as well. I also like that the NFL liked Michael Penix, because I liked Michael Penix.
And why wouldn't you have liked Michael Penix, right? We were told he's not that good. He's not going to be. All he did was be great in college, and he's not injury prone. He played two healthy seasons. He's a little old. So, like, I guess if you're going down that rabbit hole of, like, quarterback of the future, if Kirk does last 2-3 years of his contract and the Achilles holds up fine, then yeah, you did draft your quarterback of the future, but now your quarterback of the future is the same age like Brandon Weeden was when he entered the NFL. And I don't know. Like, I like Michael Penix. So I also kind of feel bad for Michael Penix, because I want to see him as soon as possible in the NFL, because I want to see him continue to prove the people wrong that don't believe in him. And now in a perfect world for Atlanta, he probably won't play for 2 years. So the fact that Michael Penix went eight is awesome. That's very, very cool.
It's just proof that, you know, teams have different viewpoints than what the consensus is from the outside. And what happens oftentimes is that one major draft analyst has an opinion that everybody else just ends up gravitating toward. Mm-hmm. And that includes, you have to trade up to number four for J.J. McCarthy, which they did not have to do. So shocking that the draft analysis world went 0 for how many drafts are there at figuring out what was actually going to happen on draft night. I can't believe it. But with Michael Penix, I will be interested to see how that thing plays out, or if they drafted the next quarterback for the next regime after they get fired. Anyway, do you think, last question for you, I'll leave the hottest question to the end. So if you made it here, that means you get this. If Penix and McCarthy were on the board, who do you think the Vikings take?
I wish we knew. I wish we got to know. I think they take McCarthy. I still think they do. But the more I think about it, like, I think that there was probably some genuine shock in the war room when Atlanta went Penix at 8. I think there's a large part of me that thinks McCarthy, because I've just been trained to think that way. He's been connected to them throughout the process. But when you really watch Michael Penix play the position and watch him just huck the ball downfield, that sounds like an offense that, or what Kevin O'Connell wants in his quarterback, someone who's willing to throw that 25-yard dig route up the middle that he's schemed open. He has a cannon for an arm. So I wish there was a world in which we could play out the string and see at 11 or at 10, both guys are on the board. Who did the Vikings actually want? I still think it's McCarthy, but only by a nose.
Somewhere, someone has the video of that in this building.
Mm-hmm.
And TMZ, I am asking you to pay them to get that video out. If TMZ, because I know they do this stuff, they will go and they'll get the casino worker that has the security footage, and they'll be like, here's like 25 G's. Why don't you just leak us that footage? I don't have that much money. You don't have that much money.
No.
Maybe the Star Tribune guys do. Like, they got a pretty big newspaper.
Yeah.
Is that like not right to mention them on this? No? Okay.
No, sorry. No, we're good.
We should have ended the podcast earlier. Seifert's got it. Let's pull it together and see if we can get whoever was videoing that last night to leak us the footage of them reacting to Penix going to Atlanta, and then we'll really have all the answers. Anyway. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We'll have so much to talk about here. There's going to be a rookie minicamp coming up very soon, and the rest of a draft that the Vikings are barely participating in. But when they do select players, we will react to those as well. So thanks, everybody, for watching, as always, and we will catch you next time. Football.